This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the canonization of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, the first American-born saint and one of the great heroines of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Joining us today to talk about St. Elizabeth Ann Seton and some special events that are coming up to honor the anniversary of her canonization is Rob Judge, Executive Director of the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg. Rob is also a parishioner of St. Mary in Hagerstown. So, Rob, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Thanks for having me, George. It's my privilege.
So, Rob, as we just mentioned, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton was the first native-born American to be canonized. Why was her canonization such an historic event, and why is this such a significant milestone for the Church in the United States?
It's historic. In one way, just simply because she was the first, right? If you think about the country being founded in 1776, 200, you know, almost 200 years later in 1975, you know, leading up to that, there had never been an American recognized for their holiness by Rome, and yet we have this vibrant church in America, the Catholics, full of Catholics. So to have one of our own, someone who walked on the ground that we walked on and lived, you know, not that differently in many respects than we've lived, to be recognized for her personal holiness was just a tremendous shot in the arm, and it was a proud moment for Catholics in 1975. And of course, 1975 was a difficult time, right? The economy was not good. You had the Vietnam War waning on. There was a lot of turmoil. So to see someone held up that, they reached eternity and they're with God, and that more importantly, like, we're all called to that, right? It was just an immense time of joy and celebration and pride for all Catholics, and especially, as you mentioned, for those of us here in the Archdiocese of Baltimore.
Now, it was Archbishop Carroll who invited Mother Seton to come to Baltimore initially. Could you tell us a brief synopsis of the chronology of her time in the Archdiocese?
Absolutely. So she had come back from Livorno, Italy, right? We know Mother Seton, of course, was a New Yorker. She had five children. She had a lot of wealth. She lost her wealth. Then her husband, William, came ill with tuberculosis, and they thought a trip to Livorno, Italy, a change of climate might help her heal. Help him heal, excuse me. And of course it didn't, right? So she's in Italy with one of her daughters, with their family friends, business partners, the Felicis, and Will dies. So what just a tremendous sense of loss for Elizabeth. She's introduced into the Catholic faith by the Felicis, right? They're Catholic. And it was really the belief in the real presence that drew her into the faith. So she comes back from Italy to New York. 9 months later, she comes into the church. She begins then, frankly, losing a lot of her friends in New York who are Episcopalian. She has this chance encounter with a Sulpician priest from Baltimore, and he expresses an interest in helping her with this dream of starting a school. So along with Bishop Carroll, the two of them invite her to come to Paca Street, right, where St. Mary's Spiritual Center is today. She lived there for a year. And then women began joining her. She ends up forming the first community of women's religious. The Sulpicians are also building Mount St. Mary's, which was founded in 1808. So in 1809, she ends up moving to Emmitsburg. Land gets donated to her. She formally starts the community and her school and begins sending sisters out. Bishop Carroll kind of made it all happen for her.
Now, when was the shrine itself erected? Was that all at the same time as the canonization?
It was a little before that. So Elizabeth Seton, of course, comes here in 1809. She dies in 1821. The community grows, and they're right here on this same property that people can visit today. The two historic homes where she lived are make up the Shrine property. It's also it had been the provincial home for the Daughters of Charity, and there are still 75 Daughters of Charity that live on the property. So the building that today is the Basilica was built in the early 1960s. And initially, it was the day chapel for the sisters. As she, of course, becomes beatified, and then it becomes apparent that she's going to become canonized, that chapel gets converted into a shrine for her. And then ultimately, she's canonized in 1975.
And I know you have many events planned for this coming year. Could you give us a synopsis of some of the highlights of the things coming up?
I'd be happy to. So on January 4th, Archbishop Lurie came up and helped us open a brand new special exhibit entitled One of Us. And this is in the Shrine's new museum and visitor center. So if folks haven't been out to the Shrine in the last year and a half, I'll mention that too. We have a brand new museum with all kinds of amazing artifacts that have not widely been seen by the public that are available. But on January 4th, we opened a special exhibit that will be open all year through next January that tells the story of her canonization. There's a brand new video that talks about the universal call to holiness and what that is, essentially that God has called all of us to be with him in heaven and that we can all obtain holiness, right? No matter what our state in life, whether we're lay people or religious, that all of that's available to us through the sacraments in the church. So we have a video on that. We talk about what the day was like, September 14th, 1975. Mementos. There were over 23,000 people who came to Emmitsburg on one day, if you can imagine that. There were over 100,000 in Rome for this special day. So, we have panels and artifacts and mementos that tell this story. And then we have a really large exhibit on other American saints who are on the way, including Mother Mary Lang from Baltimore. There's about 25 or 30. So, and that's just pointing to right that universal call to holiness that we're all called to be saints. So that exhibit's kind of the first thing I would mention and will be available all year. We also have a big pilgrimage initiative that we're working on. So we'd encourage people to make a trip out at any time. We're open 7 days a week. We have adoration at 12:15 with confessions and a 1:30 mass from Sunday all the way through Friday. So it's kind of like a built-in pilgrimage, right? And then you can go in the historic homes before or after mass and be where Mother Seton founded the community, prayed. We know where she passed away, and enjoy those mu museum exhibits.
You mentioned special artifacts. Could you tell us about some of those unique artifacts that are on display?
Absolutely. So there are a number of things that were like in Elizabeth Seton's life. One of the ones I think is really special is a christening gown, right? Many of us have christening gowns in our families or extended families that we use for baptism. Well, Mother Seton had one of those as a mom. She baptized her daughter Catherine Seton in this. Eventually, later, the sisters used it in an orphanage, and they would baptize infants in this gown. So we have that. We have the two wedding miniatures that Will and Elizabeth gave to each other on the occasion of their wedding. These were not exhibited in the past. This is the only painting of Elizabeth, Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton, that was done during her lifetime. We have her rosary. We have her bonnet, and her shawl, her belt. So this is actually part of her religious habit. Again, it was not exhibited before. We have her wedding ring, wedding brooch, and all of these artifacts are spread throughout the museum, with new MIDI video and panels that talk about her life and really, really make her more accessible as a person.
I think there are something like 200 parishes and schools named after St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. What kind of outreach are you doing to those institutions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've been in touch with the schools and parishes across the country that are under her patronage, and we have a special 50th anniversary logo that we've developed. We're also going to be highlighting them on our website coming up here in the spring. Many of them are making pilgrimage to this area, and we're also working with them for local celebrations. So our hope is that all across the country, the church is celebrating what's really a great milestone for all American Catholics in this year of anniversary.
Well, our guest today is Rob Judge. He's the executive director of the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation, and we'll also highlight a special pilgrimage that's coming up in the coming months. I'm George Matisek. You're listening to Catholic Review Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
With inviting surroundings, complete independence, and an unmatched quality of life, Mercy Ridge is the unparalleled choice for your retirement lifestyle. It's a way of living that promotes an active, healthier life. Located in Timonium, Maryland, Mercy Ridge Continuing Care Retirement Community features a beautifully landscaped 32-acre campus. The grounds, dining, and recreational amenities and residences are designed to provide a gracious lifestyle and a variety of exciting activities. Visit mercyridge.com.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops sued the Trump administration February 18th over the suspension of funding of refugee resettlement assistance. In the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, the bishops called the suspension unlawful and harmful to newly arrived refugees, the Associated Press first reported. The USCCB spokesperson told OSV News that the lawsuit urges the government to uphold its legal and moral obligations to refugees and to restore the funding needed to ensure that faith-based and community-based organizations can continue their work with refugees. The USCCB's Migration and Refugee Services is one of 10 national resettlement agencies that work with the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, which was established by Congress in 1980, formalizing the process by which refugees are legally resettled in the United States. The program was suspended through executive order signed by President Trump January 20th and is being evaluated to see whether refugee resettlement is, quote, in the national interest, end quote. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. High school students across the United States are invited to participate in a contest to create short videos outlining what they would do to help prevent human trafficking. Sponsored by the Alliance to End Human Trafficking, the contest includes monetary prizes of $1,000 for first place, $750 for second, and $500 for third. The submission deadline is March 30th. For more information, visit CatholicReview.org. For everyone at Catholic Review Media, I'm Kevin Parks.
Have a burning question about the Catholic Church? Curious about faith, traditions, current issues, or ways of deepening your spiritual life? Now's your chance to ask a bishop. Call in to Catholic Review Radio and leave a recording of yourself asking a question for our special guest, Baltimore Auxiliary Bishop Adam J. Parker. Whether it's about the sacraments, church teaching, or everyday faith, no question is too big or too small. Your question may be featured on an upcoming episode of Catholic Review Radio with Bishop Parker. Dial 443-263-0230 now to ask your question. Don't miss out, your voice matters. Again, that's 443-263-0230. And be on the lookout for our special Ask a Bishop episode coming soon.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the canonization of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, and we're talking today with Rob Judge, who is the executive director of the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg. Rob, I understand you're going to be doing a special walking pilgrimage this year in honor of the 50th anniversary of the canonization. Could you tell us about that?
That's right, George, we are. So we're partnering with a group called the Maryland Camino, and this is a recently established route that begins in Southern Maryland. It comes up and around DC and then up through Montgomery and Frederick counties, and it ends at the Seton Shrine on the Feast of Corpus Christi, which this year is June 22nd. So this group is going to be walking, if you can imagine it, 218 miles over a two-week period. They're going to be pilgrimaging to the Seton Shrine. So we'll have that day. We'll receive them for the 1:30 Mass, and we'll have events there. So We encourage people to look on our website. They can get more information. They could join this group anywhere along the way, but certainly join us on the Feast of Corpus Christi as we welcome these pilgrims into the shrine.
All this is happening during a holy year that's devoted to hope. And I understand you also have a Seeds of Hope program as well. Can you tell us what that is and how that works and how people can get involved?
Back in 2018, Pope Francis asked shrines specifically to be a refuge for people that are experiencing poverty in various ways. And since that time, we've been partnering with groups that serve impoverished communities, whether it's St. Vincent de Paul or inner city parishes. And we've been enabling retreat days where, you know, we cover the costs of it. And there's not a lot of cost with a pilgrimage, but there's food and there can be transportation and things like that. So we work with these groups to make retreats happen out at the shrine for individuals for whom it's quite frankly, it's really a luxury to go on a pilgrimage or a retreat. So it's definitely more information on the shrine website if people want to get involved. Whether they want to support the effort or they want to come out and volunteer, or they know of a group that's serving people living in poverty, experiencing poverty, we would love to partner with more and more groups to get these individuals out to the shrine and really help address the spiritual needs that they have, just like we all have, right?
What will happen on the actual anniversary? It culminates in September. What kind of things will go on that day?
Great question. So the actual anniversary is September 14th, and this year that falls on a Sunday. So we have 11 o'clock Mass and a 1:30 Mass, and those Masses, one of those Masses, probably the second one, we haven't actually established this yet, will be broadcast out on EWTN. We're working with the Archdiocese as well. On celebrants for this Mass, we will have food trucks. The museum and all the houses will be open. So after the Masses, it'll be a very festive atmosphere. And I just ask people to look for more details on the website at seatonshrine.org. We'll have specifics up in the next month or so.
Okay. How many visitors does the shrine get every year? And are you seeing an increase in this year with the special activities going on?
I expect we will see an increase. You know, 10 years ago, we used to see about 40,000 visitors a year. We're now seeing over 65,000 visitors a year that come to the shrine. And I would think we would get another bump this year. The Archbishop Lurie designated us as one of the pilgrimage destinations for the Jubilee year, which we're grateful for. So every time he's done that, like for the Year of Faith or the Year of Mercy, we usually see additional pilgrims come out. And of course, this is kind of a double celebration for us because it's the Jubilee Year of Hope, but it's also the 50th anniversary of her canonization. And we've definitely seen an increase in interest in coming out to the shrine. So I would just, everyone who's listening, I would welcome and invite you to make a trip out. You know, the museum is free. As I mentioned, we have Mass, Adoration, and Confession each day. Goes from 12:15, Masses at 1:30. So you kind of have the built-in sacraments for a pilgrimage. If you're listening and have a group too, we also do group visits. So whether it's a parish group or ladies' sodality, we love to have groups and we can help you with food from caterers, that sort of thing, if you want to make a day of it.
That's such a great part of the Archdiocese. You could spend a whole day visiting the Seton Shrine, and then right down the road, you have the National Shrine Grotto of Lourdes on the campus of Mount St. Mary's, which is another great spot. And also connected to Mother Seton as well, because she spent some time there teaching and ministering. So,
Absolutely. And that's a great thought. A lot of people come to both shrines at the same time. We encourage that. We're just a mile away. And you're right. Mother Seton used to go up. She used to teach catechism. They actually have a rock up there where historically they believe she taught catechism. And the Grotto Shrine is just beautiful in its own right. So, yeah, make a day of it and come on out to Emmitsburg.
I think you had mentioned in the past that St. Elizabeth Ann Seton is someone that we can relate to, especially as lay people. Yeah. Could you talk about that a little bit? What relevance does she have to modern people today, modern Catholics?
I'd be happy to. You know, she's known, of course, for establishing the Catholic school that she founded. Then her sisters built many other schools and ran them. And that's all true. Like she's a teacher, and many teachers love her and have a devotion to her. But when you really start looking at her life, there's an ordinariness in her life that I think most of us today will relate to. You know, she lost her mother at a young age, so she experienced loneliness. She experienced loss, right, of a loved one. She fell madly in love with her husband, Will Seaton, and had five children in a span of about 8 years, and just tremendous joy. She loved to dance and go to balls. She had friends. With her friends, she started the Poor Widows and Orphans Society, where they took care of the poor. So she had a desire to serve right from the very beginning. She did the books for their family business. Their family business ended up going bankrupt in spite of that, because of the shipping disruptions that were going on at the time. So she had to file bankruptcy. So she worried about how was she going to care for her kids and put food on the table. She worried about their spiritual lives. You know, would they continue to pass on the faith? Would they keep a relationship with God? So just very human things. And weaved through all of that, she believed that in God's providence, right? That come what may, God would take care of her. God would, and that God could be sought in this life and found, and that would lead her to the next life. She used to write the word eternity across the top of most of her correspondence, like always kind of keeping her end in mind. So I think all of those very human things, and yet her extraordinary response to God's grace is aspirational for all of us, right? We want to believe that God will be with us too. And she's just such a great model that's true, that he will be. We just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, like she did, and try to, as we're figuring it out in life.
And she died in Emmitsburg. Could you tell us about her death and where her remains are actually at the shrine today?
That's right. Yeah. Matter of fact, when we promote the shrine, we promote it as the home of a saint. So it's actually the only place in the United States where you can visit the home where a saint actually lived, right? So she walked through these thresholds of these doors. We know the room that she was in when she passed away. We have the chapel where she would have knelt to receive communion and hear the mass. So absolutely, it's the home of a saint. Her dying words to her sisters were, "Be children of the church," and she repeated it. And I've often thought of that, and with all the troubles and difficulties in life and the world, right? The church is what God has given us to lead us all to heaven. And it's things are not always perfect, but the church is the one thing over time that, through the sacraments and just the guidance, we receive grace and we can go to the next world. So that be children of the church, I thought was, I've often thought of that as sage advice.
Is there one aspect of her life that you've learned about over the years that maybe people might not be familiar with that you think should be highlighted?
Wow. I mean, definitely what I mentioned about providence, her focus on eternity, but I think additionally that her love of the Eucharist. We really started exploring this last couple of years with the Eucharistic pilgrimage and the initiatives around the Eucharist. The Eucharist drew her into the church. She was over there in Italy alone. Like converting back then was really difficult because it was a cultural thing. Like all your friends and your support system was in your faith, and there was a big anti-Catholic sentiment at the time. But when she was in Italy, there was an occasion where there was a Eucharistic procession going by, and she was inside the house and she saw it. And she wrote about it later that she found herself dropping to her knees. And she wrote to her sister-in-law saying, "Would that we be so fortunate that we believe what these Catholics believe, that we could actually possess God in the sacrament." So her belief in the real presence like changed her whole life, and it drove all of her service and her mission, and she made great sacrifices for it. So she's very much a Eucharistic saint, and I don't think she's not really known for that, right? But she just gives us a great example that we should go to Christ in the Eucharist and in the Mass.
Could you remind us again how we can get more information about the events coming up at the shrine?
On our website, we have a special section for the 50th anniversary. So if you just go to seatonshrine.org, you'll see it right on the let's see, on the right of the navigation 50. But there's actually a bunch of links from the homepage. So seatonshrine.org. If people are Facebook fans, they can also follow us on Facebook because we're regularly posting events and stories, et cetera, on our Facebook page.
Great. Well, our guest today has been Rob Judge. He's the executive director of the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg. Rob, thanks again so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Oh, thanks for covering us, George. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I enjoyed our conversation.
For Catholic Review Radio, I'm George Matisek. Thanks for listening.
You're probably not getting much church news in your daily newspaper or on your local TV station. The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time. There are so many ways to stay in touch with the Catholic Review. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice-weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Catholic Review Media will inspire, teach, inform, and engage you wherever your faith takes you. Read it today in print or online at catholicreview.org. That's catholicreview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week. Available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.